Welcome to the Lessons Learned podcast, where I share stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. I'm your host, Dustin Fife, and thank you for joining me today. What's up, people? Dustin Fife here with the Lessons Learned podcast, and I've got an uber special guest today that, for the first time in the podcast history, I am snuggling with my guest.
Uh-oh.
And it will probably be the last time.
Unless I come on again.
Yeah, I just thought of that. Anyway, go ahead and introduce yourself, sweet toots.
I am Dustin's more beautiful half. I am Amber. I'm his wife of 9.5 years.
Woo woo!
That's me.
Yay! And for those of you who haven't followed the blog much, Amber takes about half the pictures that I post. She's a fantastic photographer, so go check her out. Oh! Cell phone's going off. So anyway, you can check her out at fifephotography.com. Fantastic. Anyway, I brought her on today because she is an integral part of the lesson that I learned this week. And I'm going to go ahead and share the story. I guess this is kind of where it all began, where the insight initially came. And I've said in the past that so many of these lessons that I'm trying to share with people are things that I learned once that I've forgotten, and hoping to learn again, hoping it'll stick by doing this blog. But this is one of the few lessons that I always think about, all the time. Happens weekly that I think about this experience and the lesson that I learned from it. And it started when I was serving as a missionary in Michigan. It's been 11 years now, which is crazy to think about. But anyway, I was serving as a missionary. And for those of you who aren't familiar with how those missionaries work, what they do is that you are assigned to a companion. And you are to be with that individual 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are no breaks, which drove me nuts because I like my silence. I like my alone time.
You can go to the bathroom by yourself.
Yeah, that's about it. But you have to, I mean, aside from the bathroom, you have to be within eyesight 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And by the way, you don't get to choose your companion. You are stuck with that person. And even if you don't like them, you're still stuck with them. Not your choice. And so
I loved my companions, I just have to say. I had 19 of them.
19?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. You loved all your companions?
I loved all my companions. I struggled a little bit with some of them, but I loved all of them.
Loved all of them. Well, that's good for you. I guess I loved all of mine because I was forced to love them, or otherwise I would kill them. In fact, this is a story that didn't make it to the blog, but I was talking to my mission president, who's the guy in charge of all the missionaries, and just gave him a phone call after I returned home from my mission to let him know that I was getting married to Amber. And he said, "Well, Elder Fife, after the companions that I put you with, this should be a cakewalk for you." And so far, and luckily I've got somebody like Amber who's just very gentle by nature and not the type of person that would normally push my buttons. I should say, never pushes my buttons. Well, that's not true either. But for the most part, okay, I'm just going to move on now. Anyway, so up until this missionary companion, I'd had some that had gotten on my nerves and annoyed me or made me angry. But this one was unique in that this guy was massive. And he had a wicked temper and a reputation for being a tad on the violent side. And so this missionary would, you know, first week was awesome, as always, as you know, the first week you're with any companion is awesome. And then second week, third week, fourth week, things started to get bad. And what I mean was that he would just constantly give me the silent treatment. He'd walk by me while I'm in the kitchen eating my food and he'd just shake his head. Didn't know what it was about. Like, what am I doing? I'm eating my food. What's so wrong with that? Or we get in the car and he'd fold his arms across his chest and just glower. Or we'd be riding our bikes and he'd just take off, get a quarter mile in front of me, and I'm huffing and puffing trying to keep up. I'd catch up to the guy. He's like, come on, man. You ride like my grandma. Let's go. And then he'd just retort after retort after retort. This guy is just getting mad at me and I couldn't figure it out. And so in my own little way, I started to get mad too. But I knew that this guy had a wicked temper, so I didn't dare do anything. And finally, you know, one day I was just praying and I said, help me figure this guy out. Help me figure out how to get along with this guy, because it was miserable. And as I was praying, a thought came into my mind to say I was sorry. And my initial thought was, sorry for what? What have I done? I don't even know what I'm doing. This guy's being the jerk. I'm not being the jerk. I'm totally fine. I'm trying to get along with this guy. Why do I have to say sorry? And yet the thought persisted. Say you're sorry. Say you're sorry. Say you're sorry. So I grumbled about that for a day or two. And finally, I vividly remember we were riding home from Michigan. Or not riding home from Michigan. We were riding through the streets in Michigan. And it was in a country road. It was dark outside. There was not a light on the road. And in Michigan, there's a lot of deer. So I was very conscious of the deer running out. And I don't know why that's relevant. It's not, but it's kind of fun. Anyway, so we're riding. And I said, we'll call him Elder Pratt. I said, Elder Pratt, I'm sorry. And on the spot, I'm like, okay, I need to tell him I'm sorry for something. And I said, all right, I'm sorry I haven't been as good of a companion to you as I could be. And I'm really sorry about that. And it was interesting to feel the tension in the room just release. And the guy dropped his shoulders like, tell you the truth, man, you're the best companion I've ever had. I've been the jerk. And then seeing those defenses and offenses drop, it was amazing. And I thought, why did I take so long to say I'm sorry? I didn't know what I was sorry for, but I was just sorry for whatever I was. And I was sincere about it. And I thought about that a lot after that. And then I guess an analogy came to mind that when you get into an argument, when you get upset at somebody, it's kind of like a game of catch where somebody says something, they're angry or whatever, they say something, they're short with somebody. It's like throwing a baseball at somebody else, except they throw it hard. And so the person who catches it, the natural reaction is to get upset. And so what do they want to do? They want to throw the baseball back. Well, you did this to me. Remember that one time you did this? And then what does that person do? They catch the ball again. And then things get worse and worse and worse. And it's escalating. It's building until finally somebody gets hurt. But what if when that person begins throwing the ball, instead of catching the ball and letting it affect us, what if we did as I did and just stepped aside? And when somebody says that angry word or uses that fierce tone with us, what if we just say, you know, I'm sorry. Tell them you're sorry. Tell them you love them. And what tends to happen in my experience, and Amber, I'm going to invite you to chime in a minute, but when you give that sincere apology and when you show love, then it seems to melt the defenses. What do you think, Amber?
I think this has been like the most integral part of the success of our marriage. That I know when I was younger, I knew well how to fight with my siblings. And we both decided coming into this marriage that we weren't going to fight. Did not mean we have to agree about everything.
Which we don't.
We can discuss and talk about things, but we don't raise our voices at each other. And I think if Dustin were not have learned those lessons as a missionary, if he were to lose his patience at me, I think I might either cry or fight back. And so when he gets mad, he gets quiet. Sometimes I have to give him space and sometimes I can draw it out of him, but it's been helpful that I don't have the opportunity to escalate. I don't know if I would or not, but I could easily see myself escalating something if I felt passionately and upset about it. So I've really appreciated that, how that has helped our interactions with our disagreements and our marriage.
And let me add one thing. Quietly stewing is not the same thing as dropping the anger ball. Because, you know, I think a lot of us, when we initially get upset, we feel that we feel justified. Like, well, they did this to me, therefore I deserve to feel this way. Which is stupid when you think about it. I deserve to be angry and upset and unhappy. Well, I guess if that's the way you feel, you do deserve that. And, you know, sometimes for me, that quiet stewing gives me a chance to soften my heart. Because Amber and I have had many quote-unquote arguments. Like you said, we don't yell at each other, but we've had many
disagreements
and gone back and forth and back and forth. And it seems that they never end until somebody chooses to let the ball drop, to say sorry and to do it sincerely. Otherwise, it never resolves. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I do want to point out, though, that this doesn't really apply to abusive situations. No. There should not be a spouse just getting abused and just taking it all the time. And so this is for pretty healthy relationships that can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
If those are other cases that are kind of in a different playing field that might not be applicable here.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that. I actually had a paragraph at the end of my blog post, and this is one of those times where I guess I fell in love with my own writing. I really liked how my blog post ended. And then I started to talk about these abusive relationships, and I thought, I don't want to go there because it's so beautiful how it ended. Which maybe it was me being selfish, but yeah, I know of people. Was that?
You go back and put it at the beginning.
I could. That's a good idea. But I know of relationships that are like that, where the man or the woman, I've seen it both ways, where one person always gets their way. And not that a marriage is about somebody getting their way, but if one person is being walked all over, that's not a healthy situation. And dropping the anger ball in that situation is only going to perpetuate the problem. And part of the reason why I didn't put this in the blog post was because I don't have the answer. I don't know what you do in that situation. What do you think, Amber?
I think it's different for different people. I think counseling can help. I think as long as both partners are willing to try to make things work, I think there's some things to salvage there with some extra guidance from an outside source. But I think if there is continued abuse that isn't resolved, that something has to change. And that's really, I strongly feel that God has to be part of it. Whether the abusee, the person who's getting hurt, has to decide if they need to leave or get help or whatnot.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking about that, I thought about the movie Fireproof, which I don't know if you've seen it. It's a great movie. It's a Christian movie about basically a couple that are having some marital issues. And it's not at all an abusive relationship, but I think some lessons could be learned from that. And what the husband does after years of kind of emotional abuse to his wife, he has this kind of reawakening. And by this point, she has changed her mind about the marriage, and now she's the one being cold toward him. And so, in an attempt to win her back, he does, you know, this list. Do you remember how many there were?
Like 40 days.
Yeah, 40 days, you know, doing something new every day. Service-oriented behavior for the spouse. And what happened throughout this, and I think it's very realistic, is, you know, after, you know, these 40 days, sorry to destroy the ending, but he had softened her heart. And I wonder if maybe that's the strategy. I think in the heat of an argument, that may not be the best time to focus your efforts on being charitable. Well, I think it's good at that time too, but I guess what I'm saying is not just when there's an argument happening, but also all the time. And I think
the only way to know that's sincere is if it's on a continual basis. If it's a one-time mm-hmm. thing, then I'm going to doubt your motives. But if it's over time, then I'll start to appreciate and believe the efforts.
Yeah. So I guess the difference is, are you dropping the ball out of fear, which is, I think, what happens in abusive relationships, or are we dropping the ball out of love? And
I like that.
I think if we are dropping the ball out of love, that's what melts the anger of the attacker. And if we do those sorts of behaviors, not just in arguments, but all the time, then I think hearts will be softened, even for those who seem that their hearts cannot be softened.
Can I digress into another thought too?
Go for it.
I have a dear friend who's an amazing blogger. Her name is Lonnie Axman.
And she's fantastic, by the way. Let's give her a blog address because we both love her. One of them is Magdala Rising, like Mary Magdalene? Magdala Rising, if you just do a search for that. And the other one is birthfaith.org. Fantastic individual. Anyway, go ahead.
I read an article, and I don't know, I think it's probably on Magdala Rising.
She's scrunching her nose very cutely, trying to remember what.
I have the attention span of a squirrel after giving birth to my fourth child.
Why would a squirrel give birth to a... Anyway, dumb joke going on. We'll edit that out later. Probably won't be edited, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, Lonnie brought up a really important thought that she shared from a retreat that she went to about being an advocate and being an accuser, and the idea that Satan is the greatest accuser. And she said it really poetically, so you really have to go check out her article, but it got me thinking about...
How about I post the link in the blog so people can find it
that's
easily?
That's an awesome idea.
Okay.
It got me thinking about how I treat my children especially, but also it applies to spouse relationships, that if I'm in my mind, even if I'm not arguing it, if I'm in my mind and I'm accusing someone of the things that they are doing, whether or not it's consciously, I am following the actions of Satan, as opposed to what Jesus Christ does, and he is our advocate. So as I'm talking with my son or my spouse, instead of thinking, well, why did you do this, and you always do this, and it's, you're not listening, or you're whatever, in my head I can be asking, how can I be their advocate? And that will change the way that they feel about how I'm talking to them. If you always are accusing, the feeling is that they never can do anything right, and they never can do things up to your high standards. Whereas if you're advocating in your mind for this person, you can start to see the good and have that come out in your speech and stuff. But anyway, it was really profound in my mind. I'm not explaining it very well.
No, I like that. And I think that, I mean, you said earlier that the success of our marriage is because I learned this lesson, but I don't think that's true entirely. I think that's definitely part of it, but I think another part of it is that Amber I can one. I mean, there, one thing that I can always be certain of is that Amber has the best intentions for me. That she is never trying to hurt me, which is a fantastic trust that I have with her. And so I think if I can be that sort of spouse that always has the best intentions, then it makes it so much easier for the ball to never get thrown in the first place. You know?
I like that.
So anyway.
Your spouse has to be your safe place.
Yeah.
You believe the best in each other. And even if that's not true at the moment, you can start to see the good and to be focusing on the good and letting those thoughts dwell in your mind rather than the mistakes.
Yeah, there was, I know not everybody listening to this is part of our faith, but we are Latter-day Saints, Mormons, as we're frequently called. And one of the leaders of our church, I really like this quote, he said, "When you're dating, keep your eyes wide open to the faults and mistakes and different characteristics of potential marriage partners. And then as soon as you get married, keep your eyes half closed." That you don't look at those weaknesses anymore. That you halfway close your eyes. It's kind of like when you're looking at one of those magic eye pictures. That when you halfway close your eyes, it makes it easier to see the quote-unquote real picture that is obscured by the noise. And I think if our eyes are so open in our relationships that we can only see the noise, then we got problems. So maybe we should halfway shut our eyes. And what I mean by that is look at the good stuff. And that's the big picture. That's the good stuff right there. Is the strengths that our partner has and the love that we have for our partner. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can I share one more story?
Of course.
Awesome. Thank you for permission on my podcast. just another, I mean, this principle isn't just for your spouse. It's also in everyday stuff. Because the thing is what matters more than our pride and winning is the relationships. And sometimes if we choose to throw that ball back, we miss an opportunity for a relationship. An example for me is I had received some feedback on a work of mine that was not just negative, it was mean. And there's a big difference because, you know, I can take harsh feedback. That's fine. In fact, oftentimes I want harsh feedback. I kind of sort of want to be beat down to the ground so I can make the thing better. But this person was just mean and making personal attacks. And I was fuming. I was so angry about this and shocked. And I had a sleepless night where I couldn't stop thinking of all these angry retorts I was going to give through email. And yet I remember that anger ball analogy. And so after a night's rest, I woke up the next morning and thought all the way to work about what I was going to say. And it hurt. I didn't want to say it. But I wrote back. And I said, I'm sorry. Because basically the reason why this person became upset was she had misinterpreted something that I chose to do. I don't want to get into details anyway. But there was something that could be perceived, I mean, she misunderstood what I was doing, and she perceived it as me being mean and rude, which wasn't my intent at all. And so what I did was I, you know, very sincerely apologized for the misunderstanding. And unfortunately for me, she had more ammo to throw. Which is an important lesson to remember, is that sometimes somebody has more than one angry retort to throw, and so she threw another angry retort. And I, again, rather than throwing a ball back, expressed my sincere apologies again, and that dissipated the anger. I didn't hear an apology from her or anything. But about 6 months later, she sent me a message, and she never did say sorry, which doesn't bother me, but she said, "Hey, I was reading something that you wrote recently, and I just want to say that was really good." And then that kind of opened the door, and so we started giving feedback, and now she's one of my best critique partners. And if I had retaliated that first time, I would have lost that opportunity for this person whose mind is so similar to mine as far as writing goes, and whose feedback I appreciate above the majority of other people. I could have missed out on that, and I'm grateful I didn't. So I guess the take-home message from this is, you know, the natural man inside of us wants to get angry and defend our pride, defend our honor. But is it worth it? Because in the process, we're going to hurt people. We're going to lose some of those prize relationships. Well, I don't think it's worth it. What about you, Amber?
I think what it comes down to is just treating others with kindness and with softness. There's too much harshness in the world, and people are struggling with things that you have no idea about. Just give everybody the benefit of the doubt. That's my motto.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to do sometimes, but well worth it. Oh, okay, one more story. I was, Amber may remember this experience, but we were driving somewhere, and I was not paying attention, and I had made a dumb mistake in driving and almost hit somebody. And that person used a finger that, an offensive finger, until they noticed who I was, until we saw that we knew each other. And then there was this moment where...
I don't remember that.
I'll remind you who it is after I end the podcast. But it was funny to see them move this finger to a full hand wave and their angry face suddenly turn into a smile when they realized, oh, I know this person. And it's so silly that we treat complete strangers like junk. And then once we realize that there's somebody that we know, we're like, oh, well, maybe they weren't trying to be a jerk to me. You know, maybe if we can just think about that when we're, particularly with a road rage, if we think, you know, maybe that person in front of me is my best friend and I don't even know it.
I'll just assume the positive.
Exactly. Now go do some good. This has been the Lessons Learned Podcast. Thank you for joining me today. If you like this, be sure to subscribe to future podcasts, leave a sweet 5-star rating, or consider dropping a comment. See you next time.